She didn't reply, but she began chewing on her bottom lip. "Oh, my God. You slept with Maddie? Shut the hell up. Do you want the whole town to know?" She blushed, looking around. "It was an accident."
"Oh, was it? Was it an accident? Were you casually walking down Main Street, and then Maddie started walking toward you, and his penis accidentally tumbled out of his pants? Then did a strong whoosh of wind pass through, knocking said penis into your vagina? Was it that kind of accident?"
I mocked.
"Not exactly like that."
She pushed her tongue against the inside of her cheek.
"The wind kind of pushed the penis toward my mouth first."
"Oh my gosh, Faye!
I know, I know. This is why people shouldn't go out on windy days. The penises are on rampage on the windy days."
"I cannot believe you right now. He's like twice your age.
What can I say? I have daddy issues."
"What are you talking about? Your dad's amazing," I said.
"Exactly. No guy our age could ever live up to that. But Maddie..."
She sighed.
"I think I like him."
That was shocking. Faye never used the word like when it came to a guy. She was the biggest woman whore I'd ever met.
"What do you mean you like him?"
I asked, my voice soaked with hope that my friend was finally planning on settling down.
"Whoa, slow your roll there, Nicholas Sparks. What I mean is, I like the dick. I even gave it a nickname. Do you want to hear it?"
"For the love of everything good in the world, no."
"Oh, I'm going to tell you, Faye..."
I sighed.
"Fatty Maddie,"
she said, her wolfish grin growing deep. "You know what? These kinds of things you don't have to share with me. Ever. Like, never ever.
I'm talking like two bratwursts combined kind of Fatty Maddie. It's almost as if the sausage god is finally listening to my prayers. Remember Pinky Peter and Unclipped Nick? Well, this is so much better. Fatty Maddie is the promised land of sausages."
There's seriously vomit rising up from my gut, so if you would, please stop talking. She laughed and pulled me closer to her.
"Gosh, I missed you. So what do you say? Should we head to our regular hangout location?"
"Oh, most definitely." As we walked for a few blocks, Faye had me laughing each and every moment, and I wondered why I'd stayed away for so long. Maybe a part of me felt guilty, knowing that if I stuck around, I would slowly start feeling better, and the idea of feeling better was kind of terrifying to me. But right then, laughing felt like exactly what I needed. When I laughed, I didn't have much time to cry, and I was so tired of the tears.
"It's kind of weird being here without Emma,"
Faye said, sitting on the teeter-totter at the playground. We were surrounded by kids with their parents and nannies, running around and playing while we went up and down on the teeter-totter. One kid stared at us as if we were insane for hanging out at a kid's playground, but Faye was quick to scream at him,
"Never grow up, kid! It's a goddamn trap!"
She was so ridiculous all the time.
"So, how long has this thing with Maddie been going on?"
I asked.
She blushed. "I don't know, like a month or two."
"2 months?
Maybe 7 or 8.
8?
What? We've been talking every day. How has this not come up?"
"I don't know." She shrugged. "You were going through so much with Steven, you know? And it seemed kind of heartless to talk to you about my sex-lationship." Faye never had relationships, but she was a pro at sex-lationships.
"My shit was small. Yours was..."
She frowned and stopped pushing on the teeter-totter, leaving me hanging high in the air. There weren't many moments when Faye grew serious, but Steven had been like a brother to her. They'd fought and bickered more than any pair of siblings I'd ever met, and they'd cared for one another so much. She'd actually introduced us to one another during college. They'd known each other since the 5th grade and were the best of friends. I hadn't really seen her eyes grow sad since he'd passed away, but I was almost certain that they did often. I was probably living in my own world of despair, missing the fact that my best friend had also lost her best non-related brother. She cleared her throat, giving me a tight smile.
"My shit was small, Liz. Yours wasn't."
She pushed up into the air.
Well, I want you to always feel like you can tell me everything, Faye. I want to know all about the wild old man's sexapades you're having. Plus, there's nothing about your life that's small. I mean, for the love of God, look at your boobs.
She laughed wildly, tossing her head back. When Faye laughed, the whole universe felt her happiness.
I know, these tits are no joke.
We should probably get you back to work before you're fired, I suggested.
If he fired me, he would be hiring blue balls into his life.
Faye, I blushed, looking around at all the people staring our way.
You need a filter.
Filters are for cigarettes, not for humans, Liz. She joked. We started walking back toward the cafe, her arm linked with mine, our footsteps matching each other's.
I'm happy you're kind of back, Liz,
Faye whispered, laying her head on my shoulder.
Kind of back? What do you mean? I'm here. I'm back.
She looked up at me with a knowing smile.
Not yet. But soon enough, you'll get there, baby cakes.
The way she could see my hurt under the surface was remarkable. I pulled her closer to me, certain that I wouldn't let her go anytime soon.
Chapter 5. Elizabeth.
Liz, you have some nerve leaving like you and Emma did, without even giving me a call.
Mama scolded me through the telephone. Emma and I had been back in our house for 2 days, and Mama was just now calling me. It was either because she was upset with me for only leaving her a note, or because she'd been off running around town with some stranger and had just now returned home after all that time. I was leaning toward the second option.
I'm sorry, but you knew we were planning on leaving. We needed a new start.
I tried to explain.
A new start in your old house? That doesn't make much sense.
I didn't expect her to understand, so I changed the subject.
How is dinner with Roger?
Richard, she scolded. Don't pretend like you don't remember his name. And it was amazing. I think he could be the one.
I rolled my eyes. Each guy she saw was the one, until they weren't.
Are you rolling your eyes at me?
Mama asked.
No?
You are, aren't you? You're so disrespectful sometimes.
Mama, I need to get to work.
I lied.
Is it okay if I call you back later?
Maybe tomorrow. Maybe next week. I just need space.
Fine, but don't forget who was there for you when you had no one, baby girl. Sure, Stephen's parents are probably helping you now, but there's going to come a point when you realize who your real family is and who isn't.
I'd never been so thankful to end a phone call. Sometimes I stood in the backyard and stared out into the wild bushes and tall grass, trying to remember what it had used to look like. Stephen had made the place beautiful. He'd always had an eye for details when it came to landscaping, and I could almost imagine the smell of the flowers he'd planted, which were now all dead.
Close your eyes,
Stephen whispered, walking up to me with his hands behind his back. I did as he said.
Name this flower,
he said. The smell hit my nose, and I smiled.
Hyacinth.
I smiled wider when I felt his lips kiss mine.
Hyacinth,
he echoed. My eyes opened. He placed the flower behind my ear.
I was thinking of planting a few by the pond in the backyard.
It's my favorite flower, I said.
You're my favorite girl,
he replied. I blinked, and I was back, missing the smells of the past. My eyes shifted to my neighbor's house, whose lawn was even worse off than mine. The house was made of reddish-brown bricks and had ropes of ivy wrapping around each side. Their grass was 10 times longer than mine, and on the back porch I saw a garden gnome that was shattered into pieces. A plastic yellow kid's baseball bat was hidden in the ever-growing strands of grass, along with a toy dinosaur. A small saw table was set up by the shed, its red paint peeling. Stacks of wood were leaning up against the shed, and I wondered if anyone actually lived in the house at all. It seemed more abandoned than ever, and I couldn't help but wonder about the mindset of my neighbor. Behind all the houses on our block was the beginning of Meadows Creek's forest. The area was surrounded with trees. I knew deep within those trees there was a narrow river hidden in the darkened woods that ran for miles and miles. Most people didn't know it actually existed, but when I was in college, I discovered it with Stephen. In the narrow river was a tiny rock. On the tiny rock were the initials ST and EB. Those initials had been carved into the tiny rock resting in the narrow river in the darkened woods when Stephen had asked me to marry him. Without much thought, I found myself walking into the woods, and before long, I sat within the trees, staring down at my reflection in the water. One breath. The small fish swam downstream peacefully until the water began to ripple after a big splash was heard. I turned my head to the left to see what the commotion was, and my cheeks blushed as I saw Tristan standing in the river, wearing no shirt and a pair of running shorts. He bent down to the water and began washing his face, scrubbing his fingers against his rough, wild beard. My eyes danced across his tanned chest, which was covered with hair, and he began tossing water against his body, cleaning himself. Tattoos covered his left arm and wrapped across his pec. I studied the markings on his body, unable to look away. There were more than I could count, yet my eyes tried to take in each one. I know those tattoos. Each a different masterpiece from classic children novels. Aslan from Narnia. A monster from Where the Wild Things Are. The Boxcar from The Boxcar Children. Across his chest were the words, "We're all mad here," from Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. My insides exploded from the brilliance of it all. There was nothing more stunning than a man who not only knew the most classic stories of all time, but also found a way to make his body his own personal bookshelf. Water from his wet hair dripped down his forehead and fell to his chest. All of a sudden, I was frozen in place. I wondered if he knew how handsome yet frightening he was. My thoughts very much matched those old Tootsie Roll Pop commercials as I gazed at his body. "Mr. Owl, how long can I stare at this man before it becomes socially inappropriate? I don't know, Liz. Let's find out. 1, 2, 3. He hadn't taken notice of me, and my heart was pounding against my ribcage as I stepped away from the river, hoping to not be seen. Zeus was tied up to a tree, and when he saw me, he instantly started barking my way. "Shoot!" Tristan looked up toward me, his eyes as untamed as before. His body froze, water dripping from his chest down to the edge of his shorts. I stared for a moment too long, then realized I was staring straight at his package. My eyes shifted back up to his wild stare. He hadn't moved an inch. Zeus kept barking and wagging his tail, trying to break away from the tree.
"Following me?"
he asked. His words were short, not leaving much room for a conversation, very straight to the point. "What? No." He arched an eyebrow. I kept staring at his tattoos. Oh, Dr. Seuss's green eggs and ham. He noticed my staring. "Crap. Stop, Liz." "Sorry," I muttered, my face heating up from nerves. What was he doing out there? He arched his other brow and didn't blink once as he looked my way. Even though he could speak, it seemed he found it much more fun to make me uncomfortable and anxious. He was hard to look at, because he was so broken, but every scarred part of his existence seemed to draw me in. I watched his every move as he untangled Zeus's leash from the tree and headed in the direction I'd just come from. I started behind him to get back to my house. He paused, a slow turn in my direction.
"Stop following me,"
he hissed. "I'm not."
"You are."
"Not."
"Are."
Not. He cocked his brow again.
"You're like a 5-year-old.
He turned back around and kept walking. I started my steps up, too. Every now and then he would glance back and grunt, but we didn't speak another word.
When we reached the edge of the woods, he and Zeus walked up to the wild yard beside my house.
I guess we're neighbors, I said with a chuckle.
The way he glared at me made my stomach flip. There was a high level of discomfort in my chest, yet behind it was still that familiar ting in my gut that arrived when he looked me in the eyes. We both walked into our houses without a goodbye. I ate dinner alone at the dining room table. When I looked across the room, through my dining room windows, I saw Tristan sitting at his table eating too. His house seemed so dark and empty. Lonely. When he looked across and saw me, I straightened up. I gave him a simple smile and a small wave. He stood from his chair, walked over to his windows, and closed his blinds. It didn't take long for me to realize that our bedroom windows were also right across from one another, and he was quick to shut those curtains, too. I called to check in on Emma, who from the sound of it was hyped up on candy and grandparents' time. Around 8 o'clock, I was sitting on the living room sofa, staring into space, trying not to cry, when Faye texted me. Faye.
You okay?
Me.
I'm fine.
Faye.
Interested in company?
Me.
Not tonight. Tired.
Faye.
Interested in company?
Me.
Sleeping.
Faye.
Interested in company?
Me.
Tomorrow.
Faye.
Love you, tits.
Me.
Love you, boobs.
The pounding on the front door that followed after our last message wasn't that surprising. I figured there was no way Faye wouldn't stop by, because she knew when I said I was okay, I was normally far from being okay. What was surprising was when I opened the front door to see a slew of people. Friends. The leader of the pack was Faye, holding the biggest bottle of tequila known to mankind.
Interested in company?
She smirked. I stared down at my pajamas, and then glanced once more at the tequila. Absolutely.
I really thought you would have slammed the door in all of our faces,
a familiar voice said from behind me as I stood in the kitchen pouring out 4 shots. I turned to see Tanner staring my way, tossing the coin that he always seemed to have in his grip, and I leaped into his arms for a tight hug.
Hey, Liz,
he whispered, pulling me into a tighter grip. Tanner was Steven's best friend, and for a long time, they'd had the kind of bromance that made me think that my husband might leave me for a man. Tanner was a built guy, with dark, dark eyes and blonde hair. He worked at the auto shop that he'd taken over after his dad became sick. He and Steven became best buddies when they were paired as roommates their freshman year of college. Even though Tanner stopped going to school after the first year in order to work for his dad, he and Steven stayed close. Tanner gave me his friendly smirk and let me go. He lifted 2 of the shots I poured. He handed 1 to me, and we downed them together. Then he lifted the other 2, and we downed those also. I smiled. You know, all 4 of those were for me.
I know, just saving your liver a little.
I watched as he reached into his pocket, pulling out a quarter. The same quarter he always would flip between his fingers nonstop. It was a weird habit that he'd been doing way before we even met. I see you still have that coin of yours, I laughed. He snickered in return.
Never leave home without it,
he replied with a snicker before placing it back into his pocket. I studied his face, concern filling me up inside. He probably didn't know it, but sometimes his eyes looked so sad.
How are you?
His shoulders rose and fell.
It's just nice to see your face again. It's been a while, buddy. Plus, you kind of just vanished after...
His words faded off. Everyone's words always faded off when they were about to mention Stephen's death. I thought that was a good thing. I'm back. I nodded and poured us 4 more shots. Emma and I are here to stay. We just needed a bit of air, that's all.
You still driving that piece of shit car?
He asked. I definitely am. I bit my bottom lip. I hit a dog the other day. His mouth dropped open.
No.
Yep,
The dog's okay, but my crappy car hiccuped and ran into the thing.
I'll check it out for you,
he offered. I shrugged. It's okay. I can pretty much walk everywhere now that I'm in town. No big deal.
It will be a big deal when winter comes along.
Don't worry, Tanner Michael Chase. It will be all right. A smirk found his lips.
You know I hate when you use my full name.
I laughed. That's exactly why I do it.
Well, we should make a toast,
Tanner offered. Faye came crashing into the room and lifted one of the shots high. I am all about toasts when tequila is involved, she giggled. Or vodka, whiskey, rum, rubbing alcohol. I laughed, and the three of us held the shot glasses in the air. Tanner cleared his throat.
To old friends making new beginnings. We missed you and Emma Liz, and we are so damn happy to have you back. May the next few months be easy on you, and may you remember that you're never alone.
With one swift movement, we downed the shots. So, random question. I want to change all the locks in the place, just for a new start. Do you know anyone who can do that?
Definitely, Sam can.
Sam?
You know, the guy I fired so I could hire you? The socially awkward kid at the cafe? His dad has a shop that Sam works at part-time for that kind of stuff.
Seriously? You think he'll help me out?
Of course. I'll tell him that he has to, or else I'll fire him.
Faye winked. He's weird as all get out, but he's good at his job, and quick. Since when do you like quick guys? I joked.
Sometimes a girl just needs a dick, a beer, and reality television all within 30 minutes. Never underestimate the power of a quickie.
Faye poured herself another shot and danced away.
Your best friend might be the first woman I've ever met that actually thinks like a man.
Tanner joked. Did you know that she and Maddie are...
fucking? Absolutely. After you left, she needed a girlfriend to complain to in person, and somehow she decided that I looked like I had a vagina. She showed up to the auto shop every day with a story about Fatty Maddie, which, by the way, made me extremely uncomfortable.
I giggled. You mean you aren't interested in her nicknames for her sexlationships? He leaned in.
Flaky Frankie. Is that a real thing?
Faye's far from a liar.
Well, that's unfortunate for poor Frankie.
I smiled. Maybe because of the alcohol. Maybe because Tanner reminded me of some of the best memories. He leaped onto the countertop and patted a spot beside him, which I accepted.
So, how's Ms. Emma doing?
Sassy as ever. I sighed, thinking of my babe.
Just like her mother.
He laughed. I lightly shoved him in his shoulder. I still think she received the loud sass from her father.
True. He was quite the handful. Remember when we went out for Halloween, and Steve thought he could fight anyone because he was dressed as a ninja? He kept yelling at anyone and everyone he came across. But instead of being an awesome real-life ninja, he ended up with a black eye and got us kicked out of 3 bars.
We both snickered together, remembering how much of a terrible drunk my husband had been. If I remember correctly, you weren't the best influence on him. You always drank a bit too much, and became the jerk that egged on the people who always ended up beating up my husband.
Truth. I'm not the nicest person when I had one too many drinks. But Steve understood that. Damn, I miss the asshole.
He sighed. We stopped laughing, my eyes growing heavy. His eyes grew heavy, too, and we sat silent, missing him together.
Well,
Tanner said, changing the subject.
The landscape around this place looks like complete shit. I can come by and cut the grass for you if you want, and maybe toss up the fence to keep the place a bit more private.
Oh, no. Actually, I think I'm going to take care of it all. I'm only working part-time, so it will give me something to do until I find more steady work.
Have you thought about getting back into interior design?
The question of the week. I shrugged. I haven't really thought much about anything for the past year.
Completely understandable. Are you sure you don't want a hand around this place? It's no big deal for me to help you out.
Yeah, I'm sure. There comes a point when I have to start doing things for myself, you know?
I hear you. But I think you should stop by my shop on Sunday. I have something I want to give you.
I smiled. A gift?
Something like that.
nudging him in the shoulder, I told him we could meet up on Thursday night if Emma could join us. He nodded, then lowered his voice, staring my way.
What's the hardest part?
That was a very easy question for me to answer. There are times when Emma does the funniest thing, and I'll call into the other room for Stephen to come see her. Then I pause and remember. The hardest part about losing someone you love is the fact that you also lose yourself. I placed my thumb between my teeth and chewed on my nail. Enough depressing stuff. What about you? Still dating Patty? He cringed.
We don't really talk anymore.
I wasn't surprised. Tanner was as into commitment as Faye was. Well, aren't we just two sad single peas in a pod? With a laugh, he lifted the bottle of tequila, pouring us another shot.
Here's to us.
The rest of the night kind of faded together. I remembered laughing at things that probably weren't funny, crying over things that weren't even sad, and having the best night I'd had in quite some time. When I woke up the next morning, I was lying in my bed, not exactly sure how I got there. I hadn't slept in the bed since the accident. I reached for Stephen's pillow and hugged it to my body. With a deep inhale of the cotton pillowcase, my eyes faded closed. Even if I didn't feel it yet, there was no denying the fact that this was home. This was my new normal. Chapter 6. Elizabeth. Sam stopped by to change out the locks around the house later that week. I knew Faye called him creepy, but there was something so easy and friendly about him. He had blonde hair that he spiked, and rectangle glasses that somewhat hid his sweet brown stare. His voice was always low when he spoke to me, and so sweet. If he thought he offended me, which he never did, he always kind of backtracked and apologized with a bit of a stutter.
Some of these locks are extremely crappy, but others are in pretty great shape, actually, Elizabeth. Are you sure you want to change them all up?
He asked.
Sorry, that was a stupid question. You wouldn't have asked me here if you didn't need them changed. So sorry.
He apologized. No, it's fine. I smiled. I just want a completely new start, that's all. He pushed his glasses up his nose and nodded.
Of course. Well, I can be done here in a few hours or so.
Perfect.
Oh, also, let me show you something.
He ran to his car and came back with a tiny thing in his hand.
My dad also just got a new security camera bundle deal, if you're interested. The cameras are this small and could easily be hidden out of sight. A few cameras could go up around the place for extra security. I know if I was a pretty woman living alone with my daughter, I would want the extra protection.
I smiled, this time warily. I think I'll hold off on that for a while. Thanks again, Sam.
No problem at all.
He laughed.
The only person to buy these so far was Tanner, so I doubt they will be big sellers like my dad hoped for.
He worked fast and was good at what he did. Before I knew it, all of the locks in the house were brand spankin' new.
Anything else I can help you with?
He asked. Nope, that's it. I better get going, actually. I have to be at the cafe in about 10 minutes, and my car pretty much gave up on life, so I have to walk there.
No way, I'll give you a ride.
No, I can walk.
It's already starting to drizzle with rain. You don't want to get caught in that. It's really no big deal.
My nose scrunched up. Are you sure?
Of course.
He held the passenger door of his truck open.
No problem at all.
As we drove into town, Sam asked me why I thought Faye didn't like him, but I tried my best to explain that Faye hardly liked anyone at first. Give her some time. You'll grow on her.
She said I have all the characteristics of a psychopath.
He joked. Yeah, she's a bitch like that.
And your best friend.
I smirked. The best friend I've ever had. The rest of the way into town, Sam pointed out everything we saw, telling me anything and everything he knew about them. He told me since most people thought he was weird, they ignored him, but that made it easy for him to eavesdrop on all the gossip around the town.
That right there is Lucy,
Sam said, pointing to a girl on her cell phone.
She's the best speller in town. Even won the annual spelling bee contest every year for the past 5 years. And over there is Monica. Her pops is a recovering alcoholic. But between you and me, I know he drinks out by Bonnie Dean's house on Friday nights. And over there is Jason. He kicked my ass a few months ago because he thought I called him something I didn't call him. He apologized, though, saying he was on some bad drugs.
Wow, you really do know everything about everyone. He nodded.
You'll have to let me take you out sometime to a town meeting or something. Then I can show you the craziness that happens around this place.
I smiled. That would be awesome. As we pulled up to the cafe, my gut tightened as I stared across the street.
What about him?
I asked, seeing Tristan running down the street with his headphones on. When he reached Mr. Henson's store, he took off his headphones and stepped inside. What's his story?
You mean Tristan? He's an asshole. And a bit crazy, too.
Crazy?
Well, he works for Mr. Henson. You have to be a bit of a nut job to deal with him. Mr. Henson practices voodoo and stuff in his back room. It's freaky. It's a good thing Tanner has been trying to get the shop shut down.
What?
You didn't hear? Tanner wants to expand his auto shop, and Mr. Henson's store is the only thing keeping him from doing so. He's been trying to start protests to get Mr. Henson to give up his store. He says it's a waste of space, since nobody ever goes into the place.
I couldn't help but wonder what the story behind Mr. Henson's store truly was, and I couldn't help but wonder why Tristan found himself working there. During my shift, every now and then I would glance across the street to Mr. Henson's shop, where Tristan would be moving things around. The store was packed with all kinds of magical things. Crystals, tarot cards, wands. Do you have a vibrator? As the words left my best friend's mouth, I was snapped from my mental wandering. I almost dropped the 3 plates of burgers and fries I was trying to balance. Faye! I whisper shouted, my cheeks turning red instantly. She glanced around the cafe, shocked by my response to her not-so-appropriate question.
What? You act as if I just asked if you had herpes. Vibrators are a normal thing nowadays, Liz, and I was just thinking the other day about your poor dry grandma vagina.
My face was on fire.
How thoughtful of you.
I laughed, setting the plates in front of 3 elderly ladies who were giving me the rudest looks of distaste.
Anything else I can get you?
I asked. Maybe your friend could use a filter.
Trust me, I've tried.
I smiled and walked over to Faye, begging her to keep the vagina talk on the quiet side.
Listen, Liz, all I'm saying is it's been a long time since you had any action. What is it like down there?
Is it kind of like George of the Jungle meets the Golden Girls? Is there more hair down below than up here? She asked, tapping my head.
I'm not answering that.
She reached into her apron pocket and pulled out her little black book, which had always brought about trouble in the past.
What are you doing?
I asked warily.
I'm finding a penis to help you tonight.
Faye, I don't think I'm ready for that kind of emotional connection with someone.
What the hell does sex have to do with emotions?
She wondered, completely serious. I didn't even know how to tackle that question. Anyway, I know this guy who can help you clean up your garden of weeds. His name is Edward. He's a creative genius when it comes to that stuff. Once, he drew hearts down there on me for Valentine's.
You're so disturbing.
She smiled. I know, but I can set up an appointment with Edward Scissorhands for you, and then you can pick any guy in my book to have a nice, easy one-night stand with.
I don't do one-night stands.
Okay, you can lay down to do it if you want. She smirked.
But seriously, Liz, have you thought about dating? Just getting out there around a few guys. It doesn't have to be anything serious, but I think it could be good for you. I don't want you to stay stuck in neutral.
I'm not stuck in neutral, I argued, slightly offended.
It's just, I have a daughter, and it's only been a year since Stephen's death.
Wow. I was somewhat impressed by how it had rolled off my tongue without any backlash of emotion.
I didn't mean it in a harsh way. You know I love you, and you know how much Stephen meant to me.
I know. Look, I'm a woman whore, but
Even woman whores get their hearts broken sometimes. And for me, when things are hard to move on from, sex always helps.
I laughed. I don't think I'm ready for that just yet, but I'll keep it in mind.
I understand, sweetie.
But if there comes a point when you feel as if you need my little book, you just let me know.
I smiled. Your book seems so small now. I could have sworn it was bigger before.
Her hand dove into her apron again, and she pulled out two more books.
Don't be silly. I was just trying to seem ladylike by only displaying one at a time.
During my break, curiosity got the best of me, and I found myself stepping foot into Mr. Henson's shop. Within a few seconds, it was easy to tell that Mr. Henson pretty much sold anything and everything magical. Half of the store was a coffee shop, while the other half was set up like a closet that was filled with things I'd seen in many supernatural stories. As I entered, the bell dinged above the door, causing Mr. Henson and Tristan to look at one another with confusion in their eyes. When they turned my way, I tried my best to act normal as I explored the store, even though I could still feel their eyes on me. I paused for a moment, reaching to the top shelf of one of the bookcases for a book. A book of spells? Okay, then. The binding was tied together with string, and it was covered in dust. I picked up another book. Both pieces looked older than dirt, but still somewhat beautiful. Dad had always loved finding old gems like those in vintage shops. He'd had a huge collection of old books in his study that were in different languages or on subjects that he hadn't any idea about, but he just loved how the covers felt and looked.
"How much for these two?"
I asked Mr. Henson. He remained silent. I arched an eyebrow.
"I'm sorry, are you closed?"
When my stare met Tristan's, I held the books to my chest, and my cheeks blushed over.
"Hi."
Mr. Henson cut into the conversation, which was probably for the best.
"Oh, no, no, we're open. We just don't get that many visitors, especially visitors as easy to look at as you are,"
Mr. Henson said, sitting down on the edge of the countertop.
"What's your name, darling?"
His comment broke my stare away from Tristan, and I cleared my throat, somewhat pleased by the distraction.
"Elizabeth. And you?"
"I'm Mr. Henson, and if I weren't 400 times your senior and very engrossed in the male anatomy, I might think about taking you out dancing at the old barn house."
"Dancing? What makes you think a girl like me would be interested in dancing?"
Mr. Henson kept the look of pleasure on his face and didn't answer. I walked over and sat beside him.
"This is your store?"
"It is. Every inch, every square. Unless you want it."
Mr. Henson laughed.
"Because if you want it, then it's yours. Every inch, every square."
"That's very tempting. But I have to say, I have read every Stephen King book ever published 5 times over, and the idea of taking on a store called Needful Things is a bit alarming."
"Between you and me, I thought about calling it Answered Prayers, but I'm not much of a religious guy."
I snickered. Tristan did, too. I looked over at him, pleased that we were laughing at the same time, so he stopped. My eyes fell to the books.
"Is it okay if I take these off your hands?"
"They're yours, free of charge."
"Oh, no, I want to pay."
Going back and forth, the two of us argued about me taking the books for free, but I wouldn't let up. Mr. Henson ultimately folded.
"And this is why I stick to my men. Women are too much like me. Come back in another day and I'll give you a free tarot reading."
I smiled. "That sounds like fun." He stood up and walked toward the storage room.
"Tristan, ring her up, will you?"
He turned to me and gave a slight nod before he disappeared into the back. Tristan went to the cash register, and I followed. I slowly laid the books on the counter. My eyes moved to the tan and black photos of the forest framed against the wall behind me.
"Beautiful,"
I said, staring at the pictures. Tristan punched in made-up numbers for the books.
"Thanks."
"You took these?"
"No,"
he said, glancing at the pictures.
"I carved them out of wood, then added the black ink."
My mouth hung open in disbelief, and I moved closer. The closer I looked, the more I could tell that the photos were actually wood carvings. Beautiful, I muttered again. When my eyes locked with his, my stomach twisted with nerves. Hi, I repeated, this time with a sigh. How are you? He rang my items up, ignoring my question.
Are you going to fucking pay or what?
I frowned, but he didn't seem to care. I'm sorry. Yes, here you go, I said, handing him the money. I thanked him, and before I walked out of the store, I looked at him once more. You act like such a jerk all the time, and the town only knows you as this callous man. But I saw you in the waiting room when you found out that Zeus was going to be okay. I saw you break down. I know you're not a monster, Tristan. I just don't understand why you pretend to be.
That's your biggest mistake.
What is? I asked.
Pretending for a second that you know any damn thing about me.
Chapter 7. Tristan. April 2nd, 2014. 5 days until goodbye. When the taxi dropped Dad and me off at the hospital, I ran all the way to the emergency room. My eyes darted around the space, searching for something, someone familiar. Mom! I shouted, making her look up from the waiting room. I took off my baseball cap and hurried toward her.
Oh, honey!
She cried, rushing to wrap her arms around me. How are they? How are... Mom started sobbing harder, her body trembling.
Jamie. Jamie's gone, Tristan. She was holding on for so long, but it was too much.
I pulled away and pinched the bridge of my nose.
What do you mean, gone? She's not gone. She's fine.
My eyes moved to Dad's stare, who was shocked, confused, hurt.
Dad, tell her. Tell her that James is fine.
He lowered his head. My insides were set on fire. Charlie? I asked, almost sure I didn't want to know the answer.
He's in intensive care. He's not doing great, but he's...
Here, he's here. I ran my fingers through my hair. He was okay.
Can I see him?
I asked. They nodded. I hurried over to the nurse's station and they took me to Charlie's room. My hand wrapped around my mouth as I stared at my little boy, hooked up to more machines than I'd ever thought possible. A tube was down his throat. IVs ran through his arms, and his face was bruised and battered.
Jesus,
I muttered. The nurse gave me a wary smile.
You can hold his hand.
Why the tube? Why is there a tube down his throat? I stuttered, my mind trying to stay with Charlie, but the truth of Jamie was slowly creeping in.
Jamie's gone, Mom said. She was gone. But how? How could she be gone?
During the car accident, his left lung collapsed, and he's been having a hard time taking in air and breathing. It's to help him breathe.
He's not breathing on his own?
She shook her head.
Will he be okay?
I asked, staring into the nurse's eyes and seeing her guilt.
I'm not his doctor. Only they can...
But you can tell me, can't you? If you were me and you just lost your wife... The words forced emotion out of me and I choked it back down.
If that little boy was all you had and you were all he had left, you would want to know how much hope there was, right? You would beg for someone to tell you what to do, how to act. What would you do? Sir, please,
I begged.
Please.
Her eyes faltered to the ground before she met my stare.
I would hold his hand.
I nodded once, knowing that she had just told me more truth than I was ready to hear. I walked over to the chair beside Charlie's bed and took his hand in mine.
Hey, buddy, it's Dad. I'm here, okay? I know I haven't been around as much as I should have been, but I'm here now, okay? Dad's here, and I need you to fight for me. Can you do that, buddy?
Tears rolled from my eyes onto his cheeks as my lips rested against his forehead.
Daddy needs you to work on your breathing. We gotta get you better because I need you. I know people say that the kid needs the parent, but that's a lie. I need you to keep me going. I need you to keep me believing in the world. Buddy, I need you to wake up. I can't lose you too, okay? I need you to come back to me. Please, Charlie, come back to Dad. His chest rose high, and when he tried to exhale, the machine started beeping rapidly. The doctors came rushing in, and they pulled my hand away from Charlie, who was shaking uncontrollably. They all began shouting at each other, saying words I didn't understand, doing things I couldn't comprehend. "What's happening?" I shouted, but no one heard me. "What's going on? Charlie!" I yelled as two nurses tried to pull me out of the room. "What are they doing? What's... Charlie!" I said, louder and louder as they pushed me from the room. "Charlie!" Late Friday night, I sat at my dining room table and dialed a number that had previously been so familiar to me, but hadn't been used as much in recent days. As it rang, I held the phone to my ear. "Hello?" the voice said, smooth and soft. "Tristan, is that you?" The alertness in her sounds made my stomach twist. "Son, please say something," she whispered. I pounded my fist against my mouth, but I didn't reply. I hung up the phone. I always hung up. I sat alone in the darkness for the rest of the night, allowing it to swallow me whole.
Chapter 8. Elizabeth. Saturday morning, I was certain I was seconds away from waking up the whole neighborhood as I tried to start the lawnmower, which kept backfiring every few seconds. Stephen had always made it look so easy when he handled the lawn work, but I wasn't having the same luck. "Come on!" I yanked the chain to start the engine one more time, and after a few sputters, it went ahead and died. "Jesus Christ!" I kept trying over and over again, my cheeks blushing over when a few neighbors from across the street started staring at me from their homes. When a hand landed against mine as I was about to yank the chain yet again, I jumped in fright. "Stop!" Tristan scolded me, his brows narrowed and his eyes filled with irritation. "What the hell are you doing?" I frowned, staring at his tight lips. "Mowing my lawn?"
"You're not mowing your lawn."
"Yes, I am."
"No, you're not."
"Then what am I doing?" I asked.
"Waking up the whole fucking world,"
he grumbled. "I'm sure people were already awake in England."
"Just stop talking."
Hmm. It seemed he wasn't a morning, afternoon, or night kind of person, so he had that going for him. He pushed the lawnmower away from me. "What are you doing?" I asked.
"Cutting your grass so you will stop waking up the whole fucking world, minus England."
I didn't know if I should laugh or cry. "You can't cut the lawn. Besides, I think it's broken." Within a couple seconds after he yanked the cord, the lawnmower started up. Well, this is embarrassing. "Seriously, though, you can't cut my grass." He didn't turn back once to look at me. He just went to complete his job. The same job I'd never asked him to do. I was seconds away from continuing arguing with him. But then I remembered how he'd killed a cat for meowing wrong. And, well, I liked my sad little life enough and didn't want to risk dying. "You did a great job with the lawn," I said, watching Tristan shut off the lawnmower. "My husband..." I paused, taking a breath. "My late husband used to cut the grass in diagonals, and he would say, 'Babe, I'm raking up the grass clippings tomorrow. I'm too tired now.'" I chuckled to myself, looking at Tristan, but not really seeing anything anymore. The clippings would stay there for at least a week, maybe two, which is weird because he always handled others' lawns so much better. But still, I liked the clippings. My throat tightened, and the burning of tears entered my eyes. I turned my back to Tristan and wiped away the few that fell. "Anyway, I like how you did diagonal lines." "Stupid memories." I grabbed the white metal handle and opened the screen door, but my feet paused when I heard him.
"They sneak up on you like that, and knock you backward.
He whispered like an abandoned soul kissing their loved ones goodbye. His voice was smoother than before. It was still deep with a bit of gruff to it. But this time there was a slight bit of innocence that existed in his sounds.
The little memories.
I turned to face him, and he was leaning up against the lawnmower. His stare had more life to it than I'd ever witnessed, but it was a sad kind of life. Broken, stormy eyes. I inhaled just to keep from falling. Sometimes I think the little memories are worse than the big ones. I can handle remembering his birthday or the day of his death, but remembering the little things like the way he cut the grass, or how he only read the comics in the newspaper, or how he only smoked one cigarette on New Year's Eve.
Or the way she tied her shoes, or puddle jumped, or touched the palm of my hand with her pointer finger and always drew a heart.
You lost someone too?
My wife.
Oh.
And my son.
He whispered, quieter than before. My heart shattered for him. I'm so sorry. I couldn't even imagine. My words faded off as he stared at the newly cut grass. The idea of losing both the love of my life and my baby girl was too much. I would have given up.
The way he said his prayers. The way he wrote his R's backward. The way he broke his toy cars just so he could fix them.
Tristan's voice was shaky, along with his body. He wasn't speaking to me anymore. We were living in our own worlds of little memories, and even though we were both separate, somehow we managed to feel for one another. Lonely often recognized lonely, and today, for the first time, I began to see the man behind the beard. I watched the poor soul's eyes swell with emotion as he placed his headphones on his ears. He began to rake up all the grass clippings, not speaking another word my way. People in town called him an asshole, and I could see why. He wasn't nice, he wasn't stable, and he was broken in all of the wrong and right places. But I couldn't blame him for his coldness. Truth was, I sort of envied Tristan's ability to escape reality, to shut himself off from the world around him. It must have been nice to feel empty every now and then. Lord knew I thought about losing myself daily, but I had Emma to keep me sane. If I had lost her, too, I would have been emptying my mind of all emotion, of all the hurt. When he finished with his work, his feet stopped moving, but his chest kept rising and falling hard. He turned toward me, his eyes red, his thoughts probably scattered. His hand wiped against his brow, and he cleared his throat.
Done.
Do you want some breakfast? I asked, standing. I made enough for you. He blinked once before he began to push the lawnmower back toward my porch.
No.
He walked toward his porch, disappearing from my view. As I stood there alone, I closed my eyes, placed my hands over my heart, and for a small moment, I lost myself too. Chapter 9. Elizabeth. The next morning, I knew I had to stop by Tanner's auto shop for the surprise he'd mentioned to me earlier that week. Emma, Bubba, and I skipped into town, her singing her own version of the Frozen soundtrack, me pulling out my eyelashes, and Bubba being a pleasantly silent stuffed animal. "Uncle T!" Emma yelled, bum-rushing Tanner, whose head was looking under the hood of a car. Tanner turned around, his white shirt covered in oil stains, and his face dressed with the same substance. He lifted her in his arms and spun her around before pulling her into a close hug.
"Hey, Munchkin, what's that behind your ear?"
he asked her. "I don't have anything behind my ear."
"Oh, but I think you're wrong."
He pulled his faithful quarter from behind Emma's ear, making her laugh and laugh, which in turn made me smile.
"How have you been?"
Emma smiled and went into a deep, thought-provoking story about how I let her dress herself that day, which ended with a purple tutu, rainbow socks, and a t-shirt with zombie penguins. I smiled, Tanner stared her way, as if truly interested in her story. After a few minutes, Tanner sent Emma off with a few dollar bills to go attack the candy machine with one of his workers, Gary. The whole way, I could hear Emma rehashing the story of how her outfit had come to life to poor Gary.
"She's cuter than I remember."
Tanner smiled.
"She has your smile."
I grinned and thanked him, even though her smile reminded me more of Stephen.
"So I have something for you. Come here."
He led me to the back room, where a sheet was covering a car. When he pulled it off, my legs almost buckled beneath me. "How?" I asked, walking around the Jeep, running my fingers across it. Stephen's Jeep looked newer than ever. It was totaled.
"Ah, bumps and bruises can always be healed."
"This had to cost you a fortune." He shrugged.
"Steve was my best friend. You're one of my best friends. I just wanted you to have something familiar to come home to."
"You always knew I would come back?"
"We all hoped."
Tanner bit his bottom lip as he stared at the Jeep.
"I still can't stop blaming myself. The week before the accident, I begged him to stop into my shop so I could give the car a tune-up. He said he would be good for a few more months. I can't help but think that maybe I could have noticed something was wrong with the car if he stopped in to see me. If he would have let me get under the hood, then maybe he would still..."
He pinched the bridge of his nose and stopped talking. "It wasn't your fault, Tanner." He sniffled and gave me a tight smile.
"Yeah, well, the thought just passes through my mind every now and then. Now come on, hop inside."
I stepped into the driver's seat and sat. My eyes closed, and I took a few deep breaths as I lay my hand across to the passenger seat, waiting for that touch, the warmth of another's hand to hold. "Don't cry, don't cry. I'm good, I'm good." Then I felt the hold from another, and when my eyes opened, I saw Emma's small hand sitting in mine, chocolate all over her face. She smiled wide, causing me to do the same. "You okay, Mama?" she asked. "One breath. Yes, baby, I'm good." Tanner walked over to me and placed the keys in my hand.
"Welcome home, ladies. Remember, if you need me to help with the lawn and stuff, just give me a call."
"Tick already did it,"
Emma exclaimed. Tanner arched an eyebrow.
"What?"
"I actually ended up hiring a guy to do it. Well, kind of. I owe him some kind of payment."
"What? Liz, I could have done it for free. Who did you hire?"
I knew he wouldn't like the answer. "His name is Tristan."
"Tristan Cole."
Tanner ran his fingers over his face, which was turning red.
"Liz, he's an asshole."
"He's not." "Yeah, okay, he is."
"Trust me, he is. He's a fucking nut job, too. Did you know he works for Mr. Henson? He's the freaking case study of insanity."
I didn't know why, but Tanner's words made me feel as if he were speaking about me. "That's really harsh, Tanner."
"He's insane, and Tristan is dangerous. Just let me handle the work around the house. God, I hate that he lives next door to you."
"He did a great job. It's really not a big deal."
"It is. It's just, you're too trusting. You need to use your head a little more than your heart. You have to think."
"Ouch.
I don't like this at all, Liz, and I doubt Steve would have either."
"Yeah, well, he's not really around anymore." I hissed, feeling a bit embarrassed and a lot hurt. "I'm not an idiot, Tanner, and I can handle this, just..." I paused, forcing out a smile. "Thank you for this, for the Jeep. You have no clue how much it means to me." He must have seen through my fake smile, because he placed a hand on my shoulder.
"Sorry, I'm an asshole. I just worry. If anything happened to you..."
"I'm fine. We're safe, I swear."
"Okay. Well, I'll get out of here before I say something else I'll regret."
He smirked.
"Emma, take care of your mama, all right?"
"Why, I'm the kid, not her,"
Emma sassed. I couldn't help but laugh, because she was 100% right. Chapter 10. Elizabeth. Each Friday, after I dropped Emma at her grandparents' house,
I walked into town for the farmer's market. All of the